My dad was in the World Trade Center on September 11th when the first plane hit. I was pregnant with my second child, and the phone rang at 6:30 in the morning. My mom was on the line. She said, "I want you to know that Dad survived." It was 6:30 in the morning. I didn't know what she was talking about, and I told her so. She said that she would wait on the line until I turned on the TV. I watched the horrible scene of the buildings collapsing, and my brain tried to make sense of that moment, but it was difficult to fully absorb. It turned out that he was in the escalators on the way to the bank of elevators that he took every day to work. And then all of a sudden, he heard people screaming and running, and he ran with everyone else outside as he watched people jump to their deaths. I hung up the phone and cried. That moment of 9/11, for me, crystallized that the world is not safe. And I imagine each of you have your own stories of when you realized that the world is not safe. And they're etched into your soul. We're afraid that fear will break us, but it won't. We're afraid that we'll be stuck in a constant place of anxiety, but we don't need to be. We survived slavery in Egypt, the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, the European pogroms, the Holocaust. We carried on through wars and abuse and death. We are a people whose fear does not destroy us. And yet I'm concerned. I'm concerned that this world is filled with people who operate from a place of fear. Our personal lives, which then blend into the community, as a result, we become hardened and closed off to the most vulnerable. On Rosh Hashanah, those of you who were in the minyan or who read my sermon online know that I spoke about anger. And anger and fear are intertwined with one another. One leads to the other. The anger that many Americans feel today in a new global economy is rooted in our fear of being left behind and not being able to provide for our families. And the anger that many of us feel in light of the rise of global terrorism makes us fear that we can't protect our families. Now, it's not true. It's not true that living with fear is something new. None of us, I can't, look a Holocaust survivor in the face and say that we have it worse. But what's unique about today is how we ingest and experience the fear around us. We're constantly bombarded with visuals and pop-ups on our iPhone that put us on perpetual alert. Only 15 years ago, we didn't have to take off our shoes at an airport or go through a full body scan. Only 40 years ago, I could ride my bicycle in front of my New York City apartment without my parents worrying. Or go trick-or-treating by myself to a complete stranger's home. So what do we fear today? This is what's going through my mind and heart. I fear that my children, my husband, those who I love dear to me, will get sick or hurt or die in an accident. I fear that my children will fall under the dangers of adolescence. I worry that no matter how much we exercise and eat right, our DNAs make us just ticking time bombs. I fear that as I grow old, I won't be able to read or write or teach or recognize the people I love so dearly. These are my personal worries. But I also fear for our nation and the world. I'm deeply concerned about who our next president will be and the angry nation he or she will inherit. I fear that there'll be a devastating national disaster, like an earthquake or a tsunami or an act of terror. I fear the daily news, just simply the daily news of violence. Just this past year or two, our world has suffered the carnage of the Syrian war, the Brussels massacre, the Paris attacks, the truck ramming into people on Bastille Day, the killing of black kids on our streets, the killing of cops on our streets, the mass murder at an Orlando gay nightclub, the San Bernardino shooting, the New York and New Jersey bombs, the Charlotte riots, and now the Palm Springs killing again of more cops. We live in a frightening world. Our fear is real, and often much closer than 6 degrees of separation. Which is why it doesn't help me, I don't know about you, but it doesn't help me when people say, oh, actually, this world is a much safer place than it used to be. It's just that it feels different because we get media coverage 24/7. That doesn't work for me. Because the effectiveness of a terrorist act lies in its randomness. If any coffee shop or bus or airport or stadium is not safe and can be a target of a gunman, then no bus or coffee shop or airport or stadium is safe. And we could argue that we should avoid all of them. 80 times in the Torah, it reads, Al tira, don't be afraid. God says it to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. God says it to every single prophet. Harold Kushner teaches that God commands us, Al tira, don't be afraid, not because there's nothing to fear, but precisely because the world can be such a frightening place. And God realizes that we can never fulfill our potential as human beings if we're paralyzed in fear. Fear can paralyze us. It can keep us from taking action to make the world a better place. So, a personal story. This past June, my daughter, my older one, wanted to march in the LA Gay Pride Parade. The night before the LA Gay Pride Parade, I don't know if you remember, 49 people were shot the night before in Orlando. And then that morning, a car with explosives in Santa Monica was caught by the police on its way to the Gay Pride Parade. So my daughter meets me in the kitchen that morning, and she says to me, So, Mom, did you hear what happened in Orlando last night? Yeah. Mom, did you hear that there was a guy caught with explosives on his way to the Gay Pride Parade this morning? Yeah. I don't think I'm going to go to the Gay Pride Parade. Whew. I was relieved. But honestly, I was sad. I was sad that my own daughter couldn't do something that is so wonderful that I wanted to support her in because we're scared. She couldn't do a mitzvah of solidarity due to her fear. The problem with fear is that it's so infectious. Kill one person, frighten 1,000. Kill a few thousand people, terrify an entire nation. The targets of fear are not just those who are killed, maimed, or hurt, but each one of us. Rabbi Nachman of Bratslav understood the infectious nature of fear when he taught Kol Ha'olam Kulo Gesher Tzar Ma'od, the whole world is a narrow bridge. Vayikar lo lehit pached klal. And the key to life is not to get oneself scared. Now, you might be singing this song in your head, but when we sing it, we actually butcher what Rabbi Nachman taught. We sing Vayikar lo lefached klal, and the goal is not to be afraid. But that's not what Rabbi Nachman taught. He taught lo lehit pached klal. The goal is not to get oneself scared, not to stir oneself up, not to let our fear spin out of control and get swallowed by paralysis. When we let our fears go wild, we not only risk paralysis, but we also risk infecting people around us. We also know that fear affects our health. Professor Margaret Miles of Harvard has written that fear is hard on our bodies. Anxiety, we know, is the number one health problem in our country. It leads to epidemic depression, alcoholism, eating disorders, prescription drug addiction. American society, she argues, is violent because we're so fearful. In study after study by the NIH, we see that middle school kids who have significant fears of being hurt in their lives have a high risk of alcohol abuse and carrying weapons. We also can't win if we try to suppress our fear. It seeps into our blood and becomes part of our DNA. So I lived in Israel during the Gulf War. It wasn't fun. There was nothing fun about it. Wherever we walked, we carried gas masks with us. And every home and every business, every place where people were, we had to build a cheder atum, a sealed room. And when the siren went off, no matter what time it was at night or during the day, you had to run to the closest cheder atum that you could find, go into the room, put on your gas mask, because that was an indication, the siren was an indication that maybe chemical weapons were coming your way. On Erev Purim, the war ended, and I never really processed the emotional toll that the war took on me. 6 months later, I'm in Northern California leading services on Rosh Hashanah, and the Baal Tekiah, the person who blows the shofar, starts blowing the shofar, and I break out into a cold sweat and start shaking. And I realized that I was suffering from unresolved terror. The sound of the shofar reminded me of the sound of the sirens. This is what fear does to us. It's insidious. It creeps under our skin, even when we try to squash it. Not only does fear affect us physically and emotionally, it leads us to close rank and become hardened to other people's pain and needs. So there's a story in the Talmud, second century. Here's the setting. The setting is that back then, most urban homes lived around a courtyard. And all of the homes opened up to this communal courtyard. And the Talmud is discussing, are you allowed to tax people in the courtyard to put up a gate in your courtyard? Because they were worried about beggars and robbery and threats of kidnapping. And the rabbis ruled, yes, you're allowed to put up a gate to your courtyard due to your fear. But then Rabbi Gamliel comes along and he says, but I just want you to know, everyone, not every courtyard needs a gate. And then the rabbis continue, well, how about if you live in a city? Can you put up a wall for your city? And the rabbis say, yeah, you can put up a wall for your city and tax everyone. But then Rabbi Gamliel comes and he says, just know, not every city needs a wall. And then after this taxation sort of discussion, the rabbis tell a short story. It's a one-liner. Here's the whole story. It's about Eliyahu HaNavi, Elijah the prophet, who's a guy who somehow intersects with the celestial realm and the realm down here. We know Elijah because we invite him into our seders, right, on Passover. So the story goes, once upon a time, there was a man. Every day he would visit with Elijah the prophet. And one day that man built a gate to his courtyard, and Elijah stopped visiting him. The end. That's the end of the story. The rabbis essentially are saying, it's okay for us to protect our families, but there are consequences. If Elijah HaNavi stops visiting you, you should be reading a sign that says, beware, you're cutting yourself off from the poor and the vulnerable and those in need of help. Today, there are 65 million people displaced by violence in our world. There are 20 million refugees, the most refugees since World War II. I'm deeply troubled by how our country is responding. A recent Pew Research study of over 11,000 European and US citizens exposed that people fear. They fear an increased surge of refugees, terrorism linked to refugees, economic burden of refugees, and just Muslim people in general. Sound familiar? It should. In the 1930s and 40s, the U.S. resisted accepting large numbers of, Jews. Because they claim that the refugees were communists or anarchist infiltrators intent on spreading revolution. That refugees were part of a global capitalistic conspiracy to take control of the U.S. from inside. That refugees were either Nazis disguised under the influence of Nazi agents sent to commit sabotage, or that the Jewish refugees were out to seek and steal American jobs. Today, it's just as dangerous. Just as dangerous when people argue from fear that Syrians are ISIS infiltrators, that migrants are Muslim invaders seeking a global caliphate, and that Syrian refugees are lying about escaping violence and are really focusing on abusing our American welfare system. History is repeating itself, folks. In the 1930s, it was the Jews. Today, it's the Muslims. Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times wrote, "Who is the Anne Frank of today? A Syrian girl." It's easy. It's easy for us to fall into the trap of xenophobic fear. That's why our Torah reminds us 36 times, "You shall not wrong or oppress the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." Because fear of strangers cuts us off and hardens us and closes our world. And we can't forget that the stranger is me. We Jews were strangers in the land of Egypt. So how can we come together? How can we come together to face the fears that we do experience in the world? We only need to look at our history. What did our ancestors do? When the Greeks burned our temple and the Spaniards forced us to convert and the Nazis burned numbers in our family's arms, we acted with civic courage. Civic courage is when we come together in community to challenge corrupt conditions and take a public stand for justice in pursuit of the common good. We Jews exhibited civic courage when we didn't let the burning of the temple destroy us and we created the Talmud. We showed civic courage in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising when we tried to fight against being transported to Treblinka. We Jews showed civic courage when we created the State of Israel. So how can we act with civic courage today? I have three suggestions. We need to name our fear, feel it, but not let it control us. We need to look fear in the face and act despite it. And we need to come together with people who are different from us. So what does it mean to name our fear, feel it, and not let it control us? In Deuteronomy, there's actually an excuse that a soldier can come up with if he wants to exempt himself from warfare. What's the excuse? I'm afraid. That's it, and that's good enough. Because life confronts us with real distractions. It's reasonable and human to feel those things. What's hard is trying to distinguish between realistic and unrealistic fears. Are we paranoid or are we prudent? Is the guy in the airport a scary man who's going to blow everyone up, or is he just a guy on vacation? A second approach to living with fear is to look fear in the face and act despite it. Eleanor Roosevelt taught, you gain strength and courage and confidence every time you experience something and you look fear in the face and you're able to say to yourself, I lived through this horror and I can take anything that's coming at me. Looking fear in the face is actually something I've seen a lot of you in this congregation do. Whether it's flying across the country to take care of a parent with dementia, rebuilding one's life after a divorce, accessing appropriate health care for mental illness, finding the right situation for your child with special needs. None of us want to do these things. But when we're faced with it, we rise to the occasion. Psalm 23 says, remember that famous line, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Rabbi David Wolpe says, that's ridiculous. Of course we fear evil. Of course we fear. But the point of that line is that we walk anyway. 3 weeks ago, a colleague of mine was diagnosed with grade 3 breast cancer. Her hair started falling out because she was going through chemo treatments, and so she needed to go to the barber to shave her head. And her husband decided to go with her. They both shaved their head in solidarity. And later that afternoon, they posted a picture of themselves, two bald people kissing. During World War II, Portugal issued strict instructions to its diplomats to reject requests of visas just from Jews. But the Portuguese Consul General in France, Sousa Mendes, violated these orders. And he said, I'd rather stand with God and against man than stand with man and against God. He issued 6,000 visas for Jews. His life was on the line. He had nothing to gain. But he, like my rabbinic colleague, stared fear in the face and acted anyway. A third approach to living with fear is to form community. Build bridges with people who are not like you. And this takes civic courage, something we've lost because our communities are so splintered and segregated and divided. See, in biblical times, we would go to the well. The well was the place of gathering. Isaac met Rebekah there. Abraham's servant prayed for a wife for his son Isaac there. It was a place of gathering for people, no matter what your gender or your ethnic tribe or age. In Los Angeles, we've buried our well. We play in our own backyards. We take our own separate escalators up to the Staples Center and never brush shoulders with people who aren't like us. So before I invite you to join the rabbis and lay leaders of Temple Israel to take action, there's one more tool I think we need to face our fears. And it comes from a place we'd least expect it, our ancient idea of Yirat Hashem. Yirat Hashem is usually translated as fear of God. And now you're thinking, and I think, ugh, that sounds gross. Why do I want to fear God? But it's really not. The word pachad is what I've been talking about today. Pachad is fear. It's that panic or terror. It closes you off. Yirah is awe and wonder. Yirat Hashem isn't fear of God. It's that, oh my goodness, moment when you see a woman giving birth, or when you stare down at the Grand Canyon, or when you see a father comforting his son in illness. As Harold Kushner teaches, fear is not something I really want in my religion. But awe expands the soul and makes us want to draw closer. I feel this type of holy awe on Rosh Hashanah when we all go to the beach for Tashlich. And I'm sitting out there and I see the huge horizon and I notice how small I am in the universe's story. Or lately when I was at an IMAX film and I put on my 3D glasses and there were all of these planets and moons and asteroids passing by me, flying by me, and the universe was so grand, and I sat there in the IMAX theater sobbing. Because I noticed that I was just one speck in this huge world. And if you've ever felt this way, you know that when you're plugged into this awareness, there's no fear. So today I invite you. I invite you to name your fears, feel them, but not let them control you. Look fear in the face, and then exercise civic courage with faith. Here are my three invitations. I invite you to join me and the leaders of Temple Israel on Sunday, January 29th at LA Family Housing. LA Family Housing is a wonderful organization that I've just been honored to join the board of. And they place families who are homeless into homes. We'll tour one of their homes, and then we'll serve lunch with people and meet them and sit with them and talk with them. Because when we meet the other in celebration, our fear abates. Second, I invite all the women in the room, sorry men, but this is just for the women for a moment. I invite all the women in the room to join me Friday, October 28th at 1 p.m. at the Women's Mosque of America for prayer services. So last year, I co-taught a class to Temple Israel women and to Muslim women about Islam and Judaism, and I learned how much we're actually alike. I never deeply understood that. And now I understand that when we meet the other in prayer, our fear abates. And finally, I invite you, each of you, to select from one of our many volunteer communities. You have it in your booklets. It's out on the table outside, to join us and to get together with people who aren't like you. You can tutor a homeless person. You can do voter registration and banking with Blessed Sacrament Church. You can serve lunch at my friend's place with the Lunch Project of Temple Israel. You can become active in our 3x3 social justice campaign. Because when we meet others in educational and political opportunities, our fear abates. So here's the message. Act. Do something. Push away the escalating fear and violence in our society. Build bridges and connections with people who are not like you. To be human takes courage. To be good takes civic courage. To be a Jew takes courage, action, and faith. Good luck to each one of us.